Okay, my name's Kirsten. Thanks for having me here today. I work on a mixed livestock farm just outside of Leeds. I have a herd of dairy goats who make cheese, and I work as a general farmhand as well. And 3 years ago, we set up a vegetable CSA, and then more recently, we set up a chicken and a pork CSA. And so now I work for the Soil Association 3 days a week, trying to support other people up and down the east of the country to set up CSAs. So, I don't know if you saw, but in the States, about 2 weeks ago, Michelle Obama oversaw a breaking of the turf in the White House. They've planted up I think it's half an acre or something like that, right near the fence, so everyone can see it. But these figures are really interesting because they're bandied around quite a lot. How much food can you get from a certain amount of land? And this is just one of them. So a third of an acre would feed a family of six. So an acre could feed 18. We actually work on an acre feeding 30 families on our CSAs, and that's the kind of figure we give people as a guideline. So just to make you aware of that. So stripped down to its bare bones, a CSA is basically just a marketing structure. It's a way to get money to the people who produce the food and food to the people who want to consume it. So that's all it is, but it has so many great side benefits. So one of the main characteristics is advanced payment, is a commitment to consume food that a farmer produces. And that means that the producer has the security, the financial security to produce that food. And then the consumers have more involvement in how their food is produced. So the benefits of this is that all the money needed to run a farming enterprise are provided by the people who eat the food. The farmer isn't going into debt, they're not having to take out loans, they're not having to apply for external funding. As a group of consumers setting up a CSA, there's much less need to apply to the local food programme or any other grant-giving body that's giving money out at the moment to set up community enterprises. And if you're self-financing, you can do what you want, when you like. You don't have to tick someone else's boxes. So that's one of the major strengths of running a CSA. It's sustainable in the long term because it's paying someone to do work that is generally quite underpaid in this country, and that's why so many people are leaving the industry, and there's a massive lack of new entrants. So many people who are inheriting land are leaving the land, going to work elsewhere. And it's a way of widening access to local food, because there's all sorts of structures we'll go into later that to enable people low incomes to access the food, and also to enable people with large income but with no time to have an involvement with the land. So as I said, the finances are provided by the community of people who eat the food, which gives you independence and flexibility. And it means the people who eat the food have more control over what's grown, how it's grown. And the farmers enjoy a fair rate of pay. At Stroud, which we just saw, the farmers are paid £10 an hour, or I think something about £20,000 to £22,000 a year. The farmer that I work for, she earns something like 2p an hour. So you can see the difference there. We need to be supporting farmers so that they can carry on producing our food for us. It means they don't have to spend half their life standing on market stalls or ringing up supermarket buyers. They don't have to do any marketing because it's done at the beginning of the season before they're spending their time growing. So they'll spend the winter recruiting new members, and then when spring starts and they need to be on the land 100% of the time, they're free to do that. And it also means the farmers are part of the community. As a farmer, I can guarantee you, sometimes it gets really quite lonely, and it's really valuable to be part of the community and to know the people who are eating the food we produce and have that instant feedback. So if something goes wrong, we know straight away, and we're going to want to produce better food because we're friends with the people who eat it. They're part of our community, we're part of their community. So one way of making CSA food more accessible is to have work shares, which I'm not sure if Stroud is possible. They have work shares. So where a share of food might cost £600 for a year, some CSAs offer work shares for £300, but then the member has to make a commitment to work, say, 3 hours every fortnight, or it depends on the CSA, but they have to make a commitment to work to pay off the rest of their share, which means they can train up, they can learn gardening skills, and they can eat good organic local food, not necessarily organic, but definitely local. There's a share-a-share scheme. This is quite popular in the States, where someone who can afford to buy a share will add a certain percentage, pay a little bit more, and then if you get enough people doing that, you can offer someone a free share, or at least a subsidised share. Around Middlesbrough in Sunderland, the credit unions have got involved, and they buy a share and then sell it to a member weekly, because usually CSAs encourage people to pay up front. and make it more expensive to pay by week, so they have that security, financial security. So credit unions will buy it so that they can gain the benefit of having that cheaper rate and then sell it on a weekly basis so the member doesn't share the, shoulder the burden. You can do the same kind of thing with an internal CSA, loan, where part of your budget is put aside to loan out, to use as a loan. Or you could apply for external funding. I've not heard of anyone doing this, but I don't see why it shouldn't be possible to apply to the PCT. I know in Yorkshire at the moment, or certainly in West Yorkshire, PCTs have got a huge amount of money and they're actively looking for projects involving sort of outdoor activity and healthy growing activities to support. Or corporations, I think they'd be a really good source. Maybe not right now, this was probably like a year ago, it might have been better, but as part of their corporate social responsibility schemes, they might be looking, it might be a great way and an easy way for them to get involved and then offer that share subsidised to a low-income family. So basically there's no set model for CSAs. Every single CSA is different. All it is a way of supporting the farmer to produce food and supporting the community to have access to food. And it gives a greater accountability to the consumer because the consumer will come onto the land and see how the food is being produced. If there are any problems, that goes straight back to the farmer who changes the way they do things. As I said, it encourages sustainable forms of agriculture because instead of cutting corners because they're spending time marketing, farmers can then work towards being better farmers, to farming in a more environmentally friendly way. And I should say, CSAs, not all CSAs are organic, and we work with non-organic land farmers and CSAs as well. I think CSAs are a tool for a transition. So if our farming becomes more localised, food isn't being transported all over the country, I think this is a way that we can support more local farmers, support more new entrants into farming. So at the moment, I think most CSAs are rural, or at least peri-urban. So there are challenges for running CSAs in the cities. Firstly, land. A lot of land, especially in our cities in Leeds and Sheffield, are likely to be contaminated, so that might be quite a problem. One way to overcome that might be to raise it up, put a membrane down, raise it into beds. And a lack of producers, and that's true throughout the country. There's a lack of growers, with the experience needed to grow, and the planning experience to grow successionally for a large number of people and get the best out of the land. But there's a huge number of people who need feeding, so there's a great market there to access. And there's out of that market, there will be new people training up as growers who will sort of supplement the growers we have now. So this is our CSA. It's a mixed livestock farm. It's 160 acres with beef, pork, sheep, goats, chickens, layers, and turkey chickens, ducks, turkeys, and I think that's about it. But we have a 2-acre wall garden in the middle of the farm. It wasn't really being used. And it was a real tragedy. The walls were in a horrible state of disrepair. They still are now, you can see in the background there. It wasn't being used at all to its full potential. And we wanted to find a way to get more people from our local villages onto the farm, because we're in between three ex-mining villages. Huge numbers of teenage mothers and unemployment, and just not much interest in what we were doing. So we wanted to try and find a way to get them in. We wanted to create employment for a grower. Because around us, if you want to grow, it's basically the council. And I looked into it, and it was something like £12,000 a year. We wanted to create a position that was slightly better paid. It's still not fantastic pay. We pay our grower £8.50 an hour. So it's not great, but it's much better than working for the council or any other horticultural job that I could find around us. We got a group of people together. We talked to all our customers. We have a farm shop. And I heard about CSA to Soil Association Symposium from Stroud, someone from Stroud was describing what they were doing. So I took it back to the farmer and talked about it. We talked to everyone who came through the door for about 3 months, and everyone was quite positive. So we got some funding actually from Community Champion, I think it's finished, it's the Farming Trust managed. But we went up to Scotland to look at a huge CSA up there called Earthshare, and they supply 200 boxes a week. And on the way back, we decided we'd go for it, and we were all volunteers. And we worked out how much it would cost to run the garden for a year. So based at the time on £7.50 an hour for a grower for 40 hours a week, and then all the seeds, all the plastic, new skin for the polytunnel, compost, everything we need, utilities and tractor work, everything. And then we divided that by the number of boxes we thought we could get out a week or shares, and that was 35. And that gave us a figure of £598 in the first year. So a box for a family of four, £598, which is something around £11 a week. So it's quite favourable compared to the big box schemes. And we took someone on for 40 hours a week and launched. We asked people to pay on the 1st of March for 12 months. We asked them to sign a piece of paper that said they were going to commit to paying for 12 months. It's not a legal document, we could never hold them to it, but we just wanted to raise their awareness that that was part of the informal deal. And we asked people, if they had to leave, could they please find a friend or a neighbour who could take on their share, and that would be a good way to bring new people into the scheme. For the first 3 months, they didn't receive a thing, because no seeds had gone in the ground until the 1st of March. So they paid for 3 months without receiving anything, mainly because they wanted to support a local enterprise, they believed in what we were doing. So that just shows that they were into the whole concept of it. They didn't just want the produce, they really supported what we were doing. So we had a turnover of £28,000 in the second year, which finished this February. We've gone down from 47 shares to 35 shares, I guess because of the economic situation. But one great reason people leaving is they've learned how to grow, they've gone and taken on their own allotments. So that was about half the people have left for that reason. But we're still, with 35 shares, we're still able to employ some out full time to grow. So we did that without funding. And then we set up a fowl cop. A group of people from Leeds heard about what we were doing, liked the idea, and wanted to access local organic chickens after the Jamie Oliver programs last spring. So they came to us with this idea of paying upfront for 6 months. They pay £50 for 6 months worth of chicken, one chicken a month. That means they get our wholesale price, we get the money at the beginning of 6 months, so we can buy in the day of the chicks, so we can pay for the meat, we can pay for the chippings, the bedding, and the feed, we can pay for everything. We know we've got a market for those chickens. And it works fantastically. They come out every 6 months to see how the chickens are reared. We slaughter on farm, so they come and see the whole process from day old, right the way through to 3 months of slaughter, dressing, into the packaging for sale. And then off the back of that, that started with 20 people in Headingley and Leeds. Then it's risen to 29. And off the back of that, they started a pork co-op with 12 people. So they pay £90 a quarter and get a box of pork every month, delivered to their local farmers market, which we're going to anyway, so there's no added food miles there. And again, they come out and see how the pigs are reared and then slaughtered and butchered against the wholesale price. So the fowl co-op and the pork club, they're what we describe as consumer-led CSAs, because it was a group of consumers who approached us and said, right, here's a check, produce our food for us, which we gladly accepted and produce their food. Whereas our vegetable CSA was initiated by us. We had this land, this resource, and we wanted to pull people in. So there's different ways of running CSAs, and we'll come back to that. I won't go through this too much because Chris did a really great introduction there. CSAs are huge in the States. The United States Department of Agriculture issued their census last week, and they reckon there are 12,000 CSAs operating in the States. The CSA organisations actually reckon there are only about 3,000, so there's an interpretation issue there. But they're absolutely huge. I think about 15 years ago there were only 20 or so, which is how many there are in this country now, but they're huge. They're more mainstream than veg box. Well, I guess as mainstream there as veg boxes are here, it's just the way if you think of buying local vegetables, you go to the CSA. But Just Food is really interesting. They are a not-for-profit organisation based in the heart on Fifth Avenue in New York, and they coordinate 52 farms around the city, throughout the state, delivering into each urban neighbourhood of New York. So if you live in West Harlem, you get in touch with this organisation, they put you in touch with the farm that supplies West Harlem, and same for each of the different areas. And every year they all go out to their farm and see how things are growing. The farms use churches and schools, synagogues to drop off their produce once a week, and everyone comes to that place for, I think it's a 3-hour window, to collect their boxes. So it works really well, and this is something I think transition groups could be really good at organising, you know, being that broker between the rural farms, rural producers, and the community here. It could be a really interesting way of hooking up the two and creating a new rural. So back gardens are an underused resource, and they've been used in the States to great effect. There's two schemes here. My Backyard Farmer in Oregon is run by two women who, for a fee, go into a back garden and set up an allotment or a mini farm. And all that produce goes to the garden owner. Every week they come in, they do some maintenance, they water, they set up leaky pipes, and harvest can leave the box at the back door. San Francisco, my farm, started with one guy, and now he's got a whole army of people. They travel around on bikes and transport their goods by trailer. And they use the microclimates, so up on the hill they grow the tomatoes and the peppers and the hot crops. And then down in the bay they grow the brassicas, and they transport them so that everyone gets a mixed box. And the great thing about that is it's a really good way of getting people involved. They just have to look out their back garden and there's their farm. And they're much more likely to go down and do a little bit of weeding and get the kids involved and learn how to do it. But for those people who haven't got the time, don't want to take on the responsibility, that this is a really great way of doing it. Zero food miles again. And most people have some land, and it's not paying for itself. So this is a great way to make it pay part of its keep. Okay, there are also CSAs run on a scale in between gardens and farms. There's CSAs run on allotments. In Kettering, there's a great one called Green Patch, and that was set up on, I think, 20 plots that were being used as basically white goods dumping ground in a massive council estate. And there's all sorts of naughty business going on. So they got council backing, not financial as far as I know, but the council was very supportive. Gave them these 20 plots, and they set up the CSA supplying veg boxes, I think quite well subsidised, to the local community, and actually employing some of the young kids who were previously doing all sorts on the side. They're now growing on the side. They also employ people with learning difficulties, and they have support from Groundwork, who pay for a staff member to run the whole scheme. So that's really interesting. And then there's CSAs run on village scales, small community scales. The Future Farms is fantastic. It was a group of, I think it's 164 houses in this village. 100 of those households have joined the Future Farms. And they rent 12 acres around the village, and three are down to veg, one down to spuds, and the rest are for pigs, chickens, and they've just acquired a herd of dual-purpose cattle. And they're going to start a micro-dairy pretty soon. So they harvest everything and get everything back from the butchers and set up a village shop for the morning. And this is a result. They lost their school, they lost their post office, they lost everything. So this is the only communal activity in the village. And it works fantastically. And then this picture is in Belgium. My friend Tom runs this. He did a two-year organic growing course. And he lives in Leuven in the city. And they didn't know how to get any land. They came across this two-acre site, and he cultivates it, and what does it on a pick-your-own basis. So people pay per individual rather than per families per share. Adults pay €300, kids €150, something like that. And then they come when they like and take whatever they like. I can't possibly work. It would never work. And he said it was a bit tricky at first. People didn't know which leaves to harvest. People didn't know how to dig up a spud. But given a bit of training, it works really well. It means that all he has to do is cultivate. He doesn't spend time harvesting, which is a really time-consuming task. So that's a really great project. If you're ever in Belgium, I'm sure he would welcome you to visit. So we're working as part of the Making Local Food Work program, which is funded by the National Lottery. And the motto is connecting people with land through food. So if you want to set up a local food enterprise and you don't think CSA is your thing, then deleted it. Our partners can help you. Farmer, they help people set up cooperatively run farmers markets, or Sustain help people set up food groups, aiming specifically at low-income groups of people. Campaign for Rural England, they're mapping local food links, so they're not offering free advice, but that's a really great resource there. And Cooperatives UK, based in Manchester, are giving free legal advice for anyone wanting to set up community enterprise supplying food to communities. So have a look at the websites, makinglocalfoodwork.co.uk, and make use of all this free advice. It's only going to be around until 2012. So now it's time to get going. So what we're doing, our strand is CSAs and organic buying groups. We need non-organic to sustain. And we run regional training days. So we get a group of people together who probably have shared issues, so a group of farmers together or a group of consumers, and we tackle all the steps towards setting up a CSA. I cover West Yorkshire down to East Anglia, and there's someone else doing the south of England, someone doing the north. We have a website that's full of toolkits and how-to guides, right from the beginning, how to set up a public meeting, how to elicit everyone's views, and how to make sure everyone's feeling involved and their views are being heard, right through to planning your cropping. We've just devised a tool which is available, I think at the moment it's free of charge, provided you give us feedback. You put in how many shares you want to supply and how much land you've got, and it tells you how much to plant, how many rows, how many feet to plant of each thing. And there's loads of other stuff, so have a look at the website and then you know, get in touch with one of us. Well, I guess it would be me if you're in this area. And those are our contact details. So I feel like I've rushed through that. There's so much to CSAs. I guess the best thing is to come and see one working, because they do work. It provides us with a stable income, it provides us with contact with people we live around, and it provides them with local food. It's a really simple setup. It's as simple as you like.
Thank you. So we just have a few minutes if anyone has any burning questions occurs to him before we discuss our responses and ideas in small groups. Anyone have anything you'd like to ask a question before we do that?
I'd just like to know a bit more about local authority involvement in setting up CSAs. Have you got any examples where the local authority, you mentioned a couple already.
Yeah, Kettering.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the local authority saw the allotment site as a real problem. And so when someone came along saying we're going to improve the area, they were just more than pleased to help. As far as I know, they didn't offer any cash. But actually, our local authority gave us £500 to set up an irrigation system, because there are little pots of money about. Get in touch with a councillor. Our councillor is a member of the CSA, so that's why we've got all the cash. And they should be able to let you know what's around. In fact, the head of Leeds City Council is a member as well, so he always lets us know what's going on.
Cool.
Yeah, and it's great to get some media coverage. To tell the councillor there's going to be some local media there and you know, get a few photos.
Do you know any of the examples where CSAs have been set up on local authority owned land?
Well, yeah, Kettering, that's owned by the council.
Yeah.
Can't think of any others off the top of my head. I don't know anything about what's going on in the southwest. And the CSAs are huge in the southwest, so it's quite possible it's local authority owned. If you're approaching local authority, you need quite a solid business plan. Mm-hmm. And the thing about a CSA is it gives you a solid business plan. The money going out is already covered by the money coming in. So it's quite a strong proposal to go to someone.
Thanks.
You talked about farms and community. How does that work with farms and what they're already doing? Is it making more equipment?
Not for us. We're already going to farmers markets, so we supply a few restaurants and we sell from the farm shop as well. So it's an added element to our business. It doesn't really make things more complicated. Except in the garden, everything goes through the CSA. So the farm shop buys 10 shares, and that goes to the shop and is sold through the shop. We don't supply any restaurants in the range. So it doesn't make things more complicated at all. It makes it a lot easier because we know that garden is going to cover its cost this year, and anything else extra that comes out of it, fantastic, it's not a bonus. And then it's just an element of security for the chickens and the pork as well. We know that every month we've got 2 passes going on, and they're paid for already, so it's fine. A lot of the US CSAs are called mixed markets, so they'll have a farmers market store and they'll supply restaurants, and that diversity adds strength to the business. We actually give the farmer 5 shares in rent, which is £3,000, which is a huge amount of money to pay for 2 acres. But it's really productive land. I don't know how much Stroud pay. I think something like £50 an acre. We've got 50 acres. It really just depends on the landlord. So, yeah, we did take that into account, so we had to cover that cost. Do you want to see the budget? I'll show you how simple it is. We're not great business people, so we didn't, you know, devise all these great... Can you all see it? So that's all we drew up in the first year, or the second year, that was. And in the second year, we grew from 35 shares to 50 shares. And in the first year, we budgeted in for a rotavator. In the second year, we bought a new polytunnel, great big polytunnel that's carried us through the winter. We've had salads every week all through winter. So, budgeting is one of the really difficult areas, but that's what we look at in the workshops. And we've got the Plunkett Foundation do some really good work helping social enterprises do their business planning and budgeting. But as people say, it's a work of fiction, really. If you've never done something like this, you really have no idea what incidentals are going to come up. I'm sure we haven't stuck to that at all. But it's great to have to think through everything. So yes, we have a fund for tea and coffee when people come down to the farm. And you have all these little bits, whether you use them or not, they just sort of carry over. I should explain, the gardener harvests everything on Friday morning, puts it in the shed, and as they do in Stroud, writes on the board what goes into a large shed, what goes into a small shed, and they come and weigh out their own. So things like herbs and spinach are pick your own, so they can come and take whatever they like, take as much as they can really at the moment, it's far too much. We're going to try and encourage people to do more of that, not only because it's easier for us, it means we have to do less harvesting, it means actually getting out of there. We've seen quite a reluctance for people to get into the garden. I think people are a bit nervous about doing the right thing or just getting started. And so if we try and push them into, if they want to do it themselves, then it's going to be quite an effective way of getting them in. We have people who come down and volunteer every week. We have other people who've never volunteered. It really depends. It's up to them. If they come and volunteer, they work with the garden and they sort of develop their skills.
Should we move into the small groups and we'll have a chance to get more discussion afterwards? Could you turn the lights on? Thank you, Kirsten, for that.
Thanks.
Lots of food for thought then. What struck me was the vast range of different models, right, from doing stuff in growing food in your own back garden in a decentralised way, right, up to, you know, huge farms or whatever. And I think from a transition point of view, what's interesting, exciting about the CSA sort of approach to agriculture is, I guess it's about building resilience into our food supply, so that instead of being dependent on supermarkets or retailers to buy things from global markets, and then also, you know, the potential for us to get reskilled in this contact with knowing how our food is grown, where it's grown, being involved in growing and harvesting it. So that connection that, you know, we're going to need to rebuild those skills and that knowledge and that experience, and also, you know, for us with children, to be able to give children that hands-on experience as well as doing that.